Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Sequel Unplugged. I'm your host, Scott Klein. With me today, as always, is Sean Bice and Rohan Kumar. Gentlemen, welcome to the show again. It's been an interesting couple months since Ignite and Build, interesting announcements there. We've got some questions already coming in, but let's start with some interesting discussion around SQL Server 2016. Right, so we had some great features coming in CTP2, StretchDB, Polybase, analytics, operational analytics, always on, things like that. Spend a few minutes to talk about that, and then what we can see, or what we're going to see here shortly.
Okay.
All right, so CTP2, it's out there, available. Ignite was awesome. I mean, for as cryptic as we were about what's coming in SQL 16, response has been great. But just here's the big things in SQL 16 that so far customers are, the uptake is actually, in some sense, surprising. It's pretty awesome. But the key scenarios that what people are testing with CTP2, number one is StretchDB. The scenario there is all about, you could think of having hot and cold data on your SQL server. Some enterprises will say, hey, I'd love to use the cloud, but I'm uncertain of security and I don't want to go all in yet, but how could I sort of stretch into it? We've talked about that.
Yeah, so what's the kind of the reaction you're hearing around this hybrid, StretchDB scenario?
The reaction is, is really, really positive.
Okay.
And the sense of this, thinking of this scenario specifically.
Yep.
So I have a orders table. It's hot. I have an orders history table. A lot of customers that we talk to, they'll keep history around for so long, but that history is sitting on some of their most expensive storage on prem.
Right.
So what
they paid a lot of money for that.
They paid a ton of money for it. So what they'll do is they'll pick a point in time, they'll archive this to tape, but it turns out, somebody walks into a retailer, or it could be a pharmaceutical scenario, and they're like, hey, I purchased something a year or two ago. I bought paint for my house last year. I forgot what color it was. You want to be able to just pull up that, person's ID and then see the whole history of everything they purchased. So that is a softball example of what people are really looking at doing, but this whole notion of, you turn this feature on, you can stretch your cold data into Azure. The storage cost is pretty low, but this whole ability, you don't have to change an app, and you can redirect,
key.
It's key, and then you can redirect that query and spin up compute instantly in Azure, bring these results down. The customers have never seen it before. So the response has been remarkable.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And what about, the other thing, like Polybase, this was, what we heard initially was, woohoo, type from Ignite and Build and things like that, right? What's the uptake on some of these other features like Polybase?
So here's the deal with Polybase. I mean, it was interesting. I'm not going to use customer names right now.
Okay.
But we have these data camps that go on, and we have customers coming in here literally every 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then they spend time, 2-3 days on site. We exchange ideas. We get hands-on with the apps that they're trying to build. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we hear from a lot of customers, it sounds something like this. Hey, I have a small data team. They know T-SQL really well. It's a language that we've invested in. There's all these different data types and different languages that we might have to learn. And frankly, what they really say is, how do I leverage that T-SQL expertise so that I can query against data that is semi or unstructured?
Yeah.
It's outside of the SQL. And this is where Polybase comes in. So Polybase was only available in APS, and now making that just a feature that you turn on in SQL Server, it's been
awesome.
The excitement is great, but the scenarios that people get after, it's pretty awesome.
That's cool.
The last one I would touch on with CTP2 is this operational analytics.
Yep, you were just going to get to that. Awesome.
Yeah. So the real deal there is, if you think of, I always mention this, remember the first time we heard terabyte?
Yeah.
You go, oh, gosh, a terabyte, that's this huge thing. And we remember when we had that reaction, my hunch is if my kids end up doing what we do for a living, an exabyte to them will be a terabyte. So, I mean, it's just going to be what a terabyte is to us today, an exabyte will be to them. It was just giant file size and whatnot. So if you think of this, the massive amount of data, all these signals coming in from all over the place, what people really want to get after are scenarios that, like, real-time analytics. Yeah. You know, if I want to do fraud detection, I'd love to be writing orders into hot rows and then doing analytics on top of those rows so I can detect fraud. I don't have to ETL it out to a data warehouse, et cetera. Yep. So
that's good stuff.
It's all there.
Awesome. And so we're going to get to questions. Aaron Nelson just popped in a question. We'll get to your questions in a second. But what we want to do is Rohan's going to talk to us here, spend a few minutes talking about something that's coming out today.
That is correct. So basically, you know, one of the big changes with CTP2 is we've been signaling, I think, one of the things that we spoke about even during the Ignite keynote. I think Sean spoke about the whole cloud first initiative, which is, you know, like one of the things that working, you know, with the same code base, both on-prem for on-prem SQL Server and SQL DB has allowed us to do is create an engineering system for the cloud, for the cloud cadence, right? Now, you take that into account and say, hey, how can we sort of, you know, add, you know, take the same pace that we have and change the game for our on-prem scenarios. So typically what would happen is if you think about all the SQL Server releases so far, you do like every 4 to 6 months, you ship a CTP, and then there's an adoption cycle, which is, you know, a few months out. So the thing we've noticed is the kind of feedback that we get on a lot of our bigger features that we build, you know, has been like, unless you sort of push for it for one or two scenarios, it's not that forthcoming, right? What we've changed right now with SQL 16 is this whole notion of releasing things every month.
Yep.
So if you're, you know, if you're already a TAP customer, you saw the CTP 2.1 build that sort of came out in June, and you know this thing is going to get released, I think, publicly within the next, you know, in the next few days. The idea over there is, you know, we've seen, as Sean mentioned, I think one of the things based on how we've engaged through CTP1, we've seen a lot more intimate interactions with people who want to try out the new features like operational analytics, Stretch, Polybase.
Right.
And the day CTP2 got released, this never happened in the history of SQL before, we had people file 3 bugs on Stretch. Imagine a completely new scenario. And so that was like, it's actually pretty amazing because, you know, and then those 3 actually have been fixed in the CTP 2.1. So you can imagine the turnaround within like 3 weeks of the issues being fired. You're fixing them, going back to the customers, working with them to make sure that we build a solid product.
Yeah, you're saying, like you guys were saying last time, the period of reporting a bug and then waiting until the several months to get back. Now it's, I can use it today and know in just a matter of weeks I'm going to get an update. The whole cloud first, push things out much quicker, get that feedback, and actually improve the product and get feedback much, much faster.
That is correct. And, you know, so this is the thing. I mean, so the expectation should be from now on till we RTM SQL Server 2016 and beyond, every month we're going to do an update, which is going to make the product incrementally better. And the idea is, you know, this is the genesis of, you know, some of the discussions we've had around fast train, which is, you know, what do we do?
Yep.
Like, you know, when we think about, I mean, you know, we're still having discussions about this, just in the interest of sharing a little, it's, hey, can we sort of reimagine the way we ship bits on-prem, right? So that's sort of a discussion that we're having internally, just based on the amazing feedback and the adoption cycles that we're seeing with these faster releases.
So 2.1 is out today.
That is correct.
That's correct. And so it's going to include all the bug fixes and
Everything that we've learned since released two and some of the stuff from before that. Yep. So you can see, like, incrementally some of the newer stuff is going to come. The idea behind monthly releases is you fix what you learn.
Yep.
You know, not all fixes come in. Some of them might come in the July release.
Sure, yeah.
Right. But the idea is to do a very quick turnaround of fixes, listen to feedback, and sort of make people
but
successful.
This is really the key point, and even for all of you watching, is that this is really a big deal for us.
Yeah.
And you kind of ask the question, why? Well, you know, the day of, you know, hey, I got some bits, I tried it out, I'm going to submit some feedback, and then I'm just going to wait.
Yeah.
You know, to Rohan's point, it is all about this iterative learning. You know, the old day, we'd sit around, hey, what is the world going to look like 2-3 years from now? And people try to literally predict what the world will look like. And it's not that you're not thinking about that, but in the old day, you would think about it, you'd hedge bets, you would ship what you thought was supposed to be.
And then hope that it was...
And you'd hope.
Yeah.
And, you know, the new world of software, when you're really cloud first, the days of these giant monolithic, those days are over. You know, because the learning from customers, what we learn literally every day, every week in these data camps, it's incredible. But more important is to take what you learn, turn it around, and keep incrementally improving the product.
Yep.
So it's more than just a monthly Caden. It's just a whole new way of how we build software together.
It's more than a learning process, right? Yeah. Over the last month or 2 months, and then applying that. Yeah.
And it's okay. You know, like, I think one of the ways, at least we think about it, is there's a lot of intuition. Hey, this is how things are, and there's a lot more decision making that's based on actual data that we're seeing in terms of adoption.
And the good thing is, you can get that feedback immediately because they can adopt it really quick,
that's
and
correct.
Then get that feedback immediately and go, oh, got to make a change, and we can get that change.
Well, to Rohan's point, when we shipped, we talked about Stretch at Ignite. We shipped bits, and the next day, we had learning.
Yeah.
You know, and it, and then to turn it around and put it right back out there, it's
it's
good.
All right, you ready to get some questions?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
All right, so if you've got questions for Sean and Rohan, you type it right into the browser there. So let's take Aaron's question first. Last month, so we're not going to talk SSMS. We've talked about that, I think, the last two shows. But Aaron's point is, will SQL Server finally be using PowerShell to execute actions, example, create database, similar to other Microsoft? Who wants to take that one?
So let me get started. So in terms of if you think about, for a SQL database as an example, clearly there is, you know, PowerShell equivalence of everything that you do in terms of create server, create database, and things like that. Now, there's an interesting question in terms of, hey, do we sort of get that model on-prem? We've sort of discussed it, you know, in terms of, hey, given PowerShell is sort of becoming the scripting language, you know, like that we're sort of going with. I mean, it's an interesting thought, you know, from a manageability experience standpoint. Definitely, you know, when we think about managing databases, you know, servers, et cetera, in Azure, that is sort of going to be a, you know, very, very key scripting language for the resources. For the on-prem, it's an interesting idea that we should think about.
Yeah. Okay. All right, a couple other questions. So Hans actually asked a couple questions via Twitter. What about auto maintenance of index and stats on SQL database? Because right now you do these things manually, right?
Right.
Is there a way to? I think he's what he's asking is, can you automate this in the cloud?
So you know, one of the it's a great question, and you know, obviously we've been thinking about to the point of the idea essentially is one of the big value props of sort of having your database in SQL DB is. A lot of what traditionally would be done manually in terms of taking those operations, from what a DBA traditionally would do, sort of would be auto done for you, right? And so there is an investment that we are sort of thinking in insights like these. I mean, QDS is a great example of infrastructure piece, if you will, that we've built and shipped as a part of SQL DB that's going to make in a cloud-first fashion, it's going to make down to SQL Server, but what that's going to enable in the long term is actually a lot more than what folks see today, right? If you think about it, QDS today is being used to say, okay, if I have a particular query plan that's changed or regressed, can I force back a plan that actually worked for me? It's a great, great thing.
Yeah.
Now, the next step of that is, hey, instead of me going and looking at SSMS, figuring out which queries regressed, could the system take care of that? I mean, you have all the data. I mean, we have all the data within the SQL engine to take a look at, hey, this particular query is regressed. And so that's the next step in terms of where that thing is going to go. Now, eventually, you can think about feedback that's coming out from QDS, you know, feeding back into the query optimizer saying, hey, you know, what kind of plans are being generated? Could we do something better? So there's very, very active. I mean, this is an area where you get into a lot of cutting-edge research and innovation in terms of, like, how can we use all the knowledge that's being built into QDS as an example, as a feedback loop into the QO, to basically say, hey, look, maybe having a different index over here. And, you know, there's other ways to do it as well, but absolutely the way, you know, we are looking about this. So, again, we don't have any timeline for this in terms of when this is going to go on, but it's a no-brainer to sort of go.
Yeah, this is all about, and we'll get to Toby's question in a second, but this is all about how can we make the engine smarter and more efficient.
Exactly. More smarter. And then I think one of the reasons we are able to do this is because we have access to data. We're actually seeing the kind of queries that are being run, the plans that are being generated, which is very different from, having this is the cloud versus the on-prem.
And in the spirit of unplugged, this is us. I mean, the question's fantastic. I mean, we have a whole team of people that's all they're working on is the think scenarios like auto indexing and we call it workload insights and to Rohan's point when you one of the big benefits for us is that you could think of this virtuous cycle. The more data you put into the cloud, the more secure we can make it, the more efficient we can make it. Why? you know, because we can train our own ML models to just observe and watch, and then you can tie it directly into the engine. So yeah. A scenario like, and we have internal workloads doing this right now. I think this is fair to share.
Right.
You know, where you really are studying their queries, you're watching their data patterns, you're coming back and making suggestions with real math behind it to say, hey, here's the improvement
exactly.
You can gain. And to do that, the progress we've made in Azure has been remarkable. So I think what we all keep an eye out for is this notion of workload insights.
Yep.
I don't think that is a short time. That's actually a giant bet for us. You know, to benefit that, you know, creating a database is one thing, but being able to have the system, you know, maintain, observe and maintain and run.
That's a continuous.
Exactly.
Continuous.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, you're monitoring. All right, Toby's asking an interesting question. We would like to use VMs as a basis for a managed SQL Server product, just like PaaS websites on Azure. So he's basically saying, can we take a VM, use VMs in a kind of a PaaS scenario?
Right.
Right. Don't want people logging in there. Kind of an interesting scenario.
It is,
right?
Yeah. So Toby, it's, you know, I see at the end of Toby's question, like, hey, is this even a good idea? So here's what I think we can share with you is that, you know, when you think about, if you're really trying to build a service, if you're looking at, hey, I want to build a SaaS application, I want that data tier to be service-like.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we've learned from customers over the past 2 or 3 years, there's a number of folks that actually did start off with virtual machines. And why do they start off with VMs? Well, it was a well-understood, well-known
yep.
thing, et cetera. The reality is those same customers that go on that journey, they'll start off with VMs intending to build a PaaS-like service. They'll get a year down the road, and then here's the conversation will go like this. You know, hey, boy, oh boy, the apps that we're building are more successful than we ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time really to do operating system upgrades. This is the first thing you'll hear. You'll hear other things like, I need GDPR, I need high availability. I don't have time to manage that. I need the system to sort of handle that for me. And you could imagine these scenarios sort of go on and on and on. And as you add those scenarios up, it really is going to be your cost. It's going to impact your bottom line. You know, so it all depends on how successful you think your app's going to be. What I would tell you is if you really want to build a PaaS service, I would go look at something like SQLDB.
SQLDB, yep.
Why? Because basically you're not going to have to deal with any infrastructure. Really take a close look at your app, its patterns. Do you really need access to the operating system? If the answer is no on a number of these things, you're going to find that building on a PaaS platform, it's going to increase your margin. You'll have better profitability. We really see this with a ton of customers, and it's going to help you scale faster. So I would just sort of, you know, kind of imagine the world today and imagine you're wildly successful with what you're trying to do. You know, where do you want to be? The last thing I'll say is I've had some customers that have gone down a VM path trying to build a PaaS service. And then they've hit the undo button, you know, a year and a half. It's not that there's anything wrong with VMs. They need their profit margins to be better.
Yeah.
They need to scale. They can't hire people, et cetera. And, you know, the big benefits of PaaS then really shine. So I just reason those two things. And then if you get tripped up, we're here every month. We'll answer whatever questions you have, but that's how I look at it.
I think there's reasons why you definitely want to go to, like you say, IaaS. There's definite reasons why you want to go to IaaS. But also definite reasons why you're going to go to PaaS.
I think the other interesting part is even the app model. I think one of the learnings we've had is this whole instance base versus everything that's in the database that you get out of the PaaS model. Making that selection early on is actually very, very critical.
Yep.
So, you know, so in some sense, you know, from a VM route, one of the things is, you know, the whole scale out aspect of how you think about your app model becomes very, very challenging as you grow and scale.
Because
now you're managing multiple SQL instances and stuff like that. So that's another thing. It forces, like, even if you want to go down the VM path, I think I'd encourage you to sort of start with SQLDB just to see, you know, constrain the way you want to build your app, because that'll help you scale.
Good. All right, next question. Can we stress table with filter conditions, example, create, you know, is that a data table? And not stress the entire table?
Well, I'm not particularly sure what, I mean, so you can sort of obviously partition the table, you know, you can sort of use separate file groups and stuff like that. So I'm not exactly sure what do you mean by stress the entire table. Is it from an I/O resourcing standpoint?
Yeah,
so if you get some clarity around that, that'll help.
Yep. All right, so there's one. Andrew. Oh, Andrew Kelly. Hey, Andrew. Please tell us that the new auto-indexing won't use the existing logic. Good one.
Yeah.
This indexes in a vacuum on a query, but query basis. Yeah, it really needs to take the big picture into account.
So the short answer is yes. I mean, it's not going to use the existing logic. Like we said, there's a lot of the whole workload insight value prop is being built on things like QDS. Which sort of tend to take a very holistic, view of the infrastructure. So it's not a query by query, oh, you're missing some indexes, let's go add them. There's a lot of very complicated math that's actually going behind this stuff.
So
the short answer is yes.
And then even on the big picture, sort of when you think of if you're going to go build something like Workload Insights, and in Azure, you have visibility to millions of databases. So from an engineering point of view, when you look at, hey, I've got this giant estate, it really is the big picture. I mean, if you're going to train these models and you're not looking at the big picture, then I don't know how valuable or efficient the workload insight. This is why we have a whole team, by the way. This isn't like one or two engineers off to the side. A whole team is looking at how do you use machine learning? How do you look at this entire picture that's growing like crazy every day? So the more data we get, the smarter these models are, the more precise we can be, and off you go.
Yep. Let me ask you this, and Hans, we'll get to your SQL Database V12 question in a second. We talked about, the learnings using machine learning to get insights into our, how the, operational statistics, in the cloud. But, we can't get insights into how people are using, workloads on-prem, because we take those same learnings and say, well, we see this kind of behavior in the cloud. Can we, apply those to maybe the, to on-premise to make the SQL Server even better?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, again, just in the spirit of, one of the things we've been discussing, just given how much we've learned just based on this whole telemetry pipeline that we've built up for SQL DB, is, is there an option, in terms of not thinking about PII data or anything, but just extremely anonymous, you just get from a schema standpoint the anonymized queries, if we get that sort of telemetry that comes from on-prem, could you do something more intelligent based on like what Sean explained? We have this whole corpus of million databases that we're learning from. This is where it gets interesting, like blindly taking what we have and applying it and saying it'll make a specific on-prem database better, that's probably not going to be that effective.
Right.
I mean, you could take some general rules a lot of that we have today. But if we get some level of exhaust, even from an on-prem database, if customers are willing to share that,
then
you can imagine. These are the kind of things we are thinking now in terms of like, is there a play over there where if you believe we can make things substantially better for you based on what we know, and purely from the perspective of how much of value this is for the customer, right?
Well, that's kind of where I was going. Is we get massive learning from the cloud.
Yes.
How can we apply that?
Yeah, and it really the reality is, if you're willing to connect a SQL Server to the cloud, then you open up this pipeline, and then you can apply the learnings. And that's the cutting straight to the chase. That has to happen. So if you choose, you say, hey, look, sounds interesting, but I can't do it for whatever reason. If you're in isolation on-prem, then really, frankly, what you're left with is best practice analysis. You can look at configuration settings, and then you can tell somebody like, hey, your environment's quote secure, or you might change these settings to be more performant. But in reality, it's a very staticky kind
of.
You can't. But it sort of would be like, imagine if Azure, these were just a bunch of disconnected databases
that you
can learn nothing from. This is what I mean about training these models. It's really about this big picture.
Yeah.
So to net it out, if you're willing to connect a SQL 16 to Azure, then we can open up a pipeline, and then you can start to drive these. Yes. You're still learning from there, but you can exchange these learnings back and forth.
Yep,
exactly.
Okay.
Right,
exactly.
And I think that is a legit scenario. Like, we keep talking about this fast train concept about delivering payloads faster, but if you think about it, that might suggest your SQL 16 is connected to Azure.
Right.
And if it is connected, then there's a lot of things you can do.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, so last question from Hans. SQL Database V12 is based on Azure Service Fabric. Is it using local storage or remote storage?
Right, so the short answer to both questions is yes. And it is, you know, it's
based on... Three yeses, man. Yes, we are
built on the Service Fabric. I mean, it's sort of locally called WinFab, and that's evolving towards being the Service Fabric. And there is bet on both local and remote storage. Again, this, you know, without getting into too much details in terms of how we architect, this is essentially based on, you know, our additions guarantee you a certain, you know, performance characteristics. Right? So, you know, locally we have, you know, a ton of SSD that we have within our clusters, you know, that guarantees that. And then, you know, when in certain databases, like the basics and the lower standards, which don't have, then we use remote storage as needed. Again, there's no hard and fast rule about this, right? You know, in the future we could sort of move and change these decisions. But
in the spirit of wrapping up, the one thing I'd add here is what we've learned is that you need to support both remote and local storage.
Yeah.
And the reality is, this is no joke, like, you know, the behind the scenes. We really have customers that show up. We have a first party inside of Microsoft that has millions of databases, and these databases don't think of it like an online retailer selling 24, you know, doing transactions 24 hours a day. Think like holiday card, you know, or your kids, you know, you're collecting the sports team, you might send mail out once or twice.
Yeah.
Do you really want small cold databases sitting on, you know, expensive local storage that, you know, you might hydrate the thing once, twice, three times a year? Like the economics that don't make sense.
Right.
That's why you really need remote storage when you think of an OLTP application. And then you have a bunch of other folks. It's high demand, high throughput.
Yeah.
You know, minimum
need
latency.
Need that local SSD.
You need
it.
You know, we're architected to, you know, really to use both.
It gives us the flexibility to say, you know,
exactly,
how to wait, right?
Exactly. I mean, these are things which, you know, as you sort of grow and learn, you can
Awesome. Well, we're out of time. Sean, Rohan, appreciate your time. And everybody, thank you for your questions. We look forward to seeing you in July. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.